How does Christianity compare with Islam, Mormonism, skepticism, Buddhism, Scientology, Jehovah's Witnesses, and other world religions? You'll find answers in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about The Christian Difference at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference.
Dabo, there are a few coaches in any sport who show more joy than you do. How do you describe the joy of the moment? For me personally, joy comes from focusing on Jesus, others, and yourself.
And again, I want to thank my constituents from San Francisco who have entrusted me to represent them in Congress in the spirit of St. Francis, the patron saint of San Francisco. And his song of St. Francis is our anthem. Make me a channel of thy peace.
Our culture loves to justify sin, and we're seeing people who are looking for substitute saviors. Instead of repenting and turning to the only one who can save them, they instead look to justify their behavior so there's nothing to repent of.
So that this time of forsakenness and being cast off, Jesus would also undergo, not because of his sin, but because of the sins of the world. He would bear those sins for us, so that we might be close to God and never forsaken by Him.
Wisconsin snowplow drivers love Issues Etc.
They have been called the shock troops of the papacy, the stormtroopers of the Counter-Reformation. They call themselves the Society of Jesus, and they're more commonly known as the Jesuits. They have institutions of education all over the world. Why are they so mysterious? Our current Pope is actually one of them, a Jesuit. What does that tell us about our current Pope and about this group that has existed as, well, kind of a, what shall we call it, the enforcers of Roman Catholicism post-Reformation? What do we know about the Jesuits? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio. We're going to be talking about the Jesuits. Dr. Matt Phillips will join us, and then we'll spend some time remembering St. Timothy as the church remembers him on the 24th of January. Dr. Ken Sherb will be our guest. Join us with questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-MY-IE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @IssuesETC, and our listener comment line is 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the Society of Jesus with the Jesuits, Dr. Matt Phillips. He's Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Nebraska. Matt, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
You actually got your PhD at St. Louis University.
That is correct.
In St. Louis, which is a Jesuit institution. Why are the Jesuits known as the shock troops of the papacy?
Well, they're not known that by Catholics. They were the, that's kind of a Protestant, I guess, derogatory way of, but that idea came about because the Society of Jesus, and known as the Jesuits, was one of their missions was to fight, mostly in the world of intellectual fighting, to teach against what they considered to be heresy, and of course that was both the Calvinism and Lutheranism in the 16th century. So that's how they got that.
Where did the Jesuits come from? Tell us about their founder, Ignatius Loyola.
Sure. Ignatius was a Spanish noble. He was a soldier, born in the early 1500s around. And by the 1520s, he was already he's born probably around 1500, maybe a little bit before. By 1520, he was a soldier. He was fighting in the wars that were going on at that time between the Charles of Spain, who was also Charles the Holy Roman Emperor, that Lutherans should know about. That's the emperor who Luther spoke before. Was fighting the king of France at the time, Francis, in these wars. He was wounded. I think he was hit by a cannonball or some kind of projectile. He was wounded in 1522-21, about that time. And during his convalescence, he had grown up as a pious Catholic knight. And during his convalescence, He kind of had a religious conversion, and he decided to begin committing his life to Mary. First of all, he dedicated his life to Mary in a very knightly way. He, you know, dedicates his life to Mary. He reads all these devotional works, and he decides to embrace some type of specific life of religious devotion. And that's kind of the origin of the idea of the Jesuits comes out of his life. He eventually ends up, he goes back to college, because he had never, he was like a second career student, basically. So when he was like 30-something, he goes back to college and ends up eventually at the university in Paris, which is the largest, big theological colleges there. And is there in the early 1530s where he gets this group of men around him. I think there were seven in the original group. And that group of men, who were all college students there together, end up forming their own little club. And that's the club that eventually becomes the Jesuits later.
So is it a religious order in the sense of the Dominicans or the Benedictines or the Franciscans or the other religious orders that are recognized in the Roman Catholic Church? Is it where
Yes, it becomes that, yes. In the 1530s, Loyola and his companions decided they originally wanted to go to Jerusalem and convert Muslims. That was their original desire. They were not able to do that. So they ended up in Italy, where they were all they were consecrated priests in Italy, and eventually they met with the Pope, and Pope Paul III in 1540 basically made them a religious order, and that's the founding of the Society of Jesus, and that's the name they took. So yes, they are a religious order, still are a religious order, and they were founded by the papal, I guess it would have been a papal bull or a papal statement that said, I give you approval for this group, and they were founded at that time. And except for a short time of suppression in the late 1700s, they've been a religious order in the Roman Catholic Church ever since then.
So they are known for their fealty to the papacy. What's that about?
Okay, yes, that was part of their founding. So they took the traditional religious vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, right? Monks and other religious. When I say religious, I mean people who have taken kind of a monastic life or, you know, specific kind of life like that. So poverty, chastity, and obedience. But they also took a special fourth vow, which was a special vow of obedience to the Pope. And in this vow, they kind of put themselves directly under the Pope. And so the Pope actually gave them kind of a mission. And that part of that mission was to, as I said, intellectually combat Protestant, what they would consider heresy, of course. And they were directly under the authority of the Pope. So, for instance, if they went to a diocese, the Pope could give them permission to do things, and the local archbishop could not restrict them from doing those things, like preaching or hearing confession and so forth. So they had a direct, they were directly under the authority of the Pope in that sense, and he kind of gave them this special mission, I guess we might say.
So do they remain directly under the authority of the Pope?
The way I understand it, that I mean, I'm sure it's changed over the years, but the way I understand it, they still take that special vow, that kind of fourth vow of direct obedience to the Pope. And in a way, it kind of goes beyond the specific diocesan lines, right? Because traditionally, you know, an archbishop or bishop is kind of the head of that diocese. So he kind of has the authority in that area. I'd have to look in the specific, you know, I'm sure there's been all kinds of things in recent past, but they probably expected to work with the bishops and archbishops, but they were not directly under their authority. They were directly under the authority of the Pope and given special missionary projects also.
Does this kind of help explain both the mystique, but also kind of the suspicion that has attended the Jesuit order?
I think it does. It's funny, you watch these movies. I can remember one of the movies about Elizabeth, the Queen of England, and they have a Jesuit guy trying to assassinate her. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. There were Jesuits active in England during her reign who were ministering to Catholics, and there were actually Jesuits who were martyred, and from their perspective, martyred by Elizabeth under Elizabeth's reign, too. But as far as I know, they were not trying to assassinate her. So they are kind of portrayed this way as this, you know, secret organization. Now, they did have, in different times in the early modern period, so in the 16th and 17th century, influence on monarchs in different parts of the Catholic world specifically. So Jesuits might be chaplains to kings. They might be tutors, because Jesuits established a lot of schools. That's one of their main missions in the 16th and 17th century in Europe, and they trained and taught a lot of elite young men, who some of them became priests, but a lot of them became nobles or political leaders. So in that sense, that's kind of where some of that comes from, I think.
Well, that's the other term that is usually associated with the Jesuits, and that is elite. What does that mean in the Roman Catholic context?
Well, in the 16th century, it meant that their schools mostly trained men, young men, who were from the noble classes of those territories, and people who were going to be expected to lead in society, right? And their schools focused on that. So that's what I meant by that. And that, I think that continues into the 17th century in Europe anyway. So that's kind of what I meant. Their schools were specifically for training young men from the upper classes of society in the liberal arts, but also in theology and philosophy and so forth.
So is it safe to say, if only through their educational efforts, they have been probably more influential outside the Roman Catholic Church than other religious orders?
I would say, yeah, I think that is safe to say, if you look at the long view over the past, you know, since the Reformation, in two ways. Well, one, because of their schools, and in the New World particularly, I mean, you could look up online and find all kinds of information about what the Jesuits did in the New, what I mean, the Americas, including the United States. I mean, there's 20-something Jesuit colleges or universities still in the United States. But also, they played a huge role in evangelizing in the New World, both in all the Spanish colonies and in Brazil, the Portuguese colonies. And beyond that, the Jesuits were some of the first great foreign missionaries to Asia. You've probably heard of Francis Xavier. People have. There's a Xavier University in Cincinnati. There's more than one Xavier, but that's probably the most well-known one. Francis Xavier was a Jesuit. He was one of the original Jesuits. And he goes to the Philippines and to India and ends up preaching in Japan, too, and dies there and is buried and was buried originally in India in 1552 or so. So, I mean, Jesuits were active all over the world as missionaries. So their influence in that sense is pretty big.
Dr. Matt Phillips is our guest, Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Nebraska. We're talking about the Society of Jesus, or known as the Jesuits. When we come back, we'll talk about some of their activities, specifically in the Counter-Reformation. What's the difference between brokenness and repentance? I've written a column in the latest issues, etc., journal titled Personal Brokenness. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Alfonso Espinosa writes about being raised a nominal Roman Catholic and finding the saving gospel in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Do you need a home mortgage, car, or student loan in 2019? Check out Lutheran Federal Credit Union. During January, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Christ Community International. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, January the 17th, we're talking about the Jesuits. Dr. Matt Phillips of Concordia University in Nebraska is our guest, where he's associate professor of history. He has his PhD from St. Louis University. Matt, what was the Counter-Reformation and what was the role of the Jesuits during that time period?
So the Counter-Reformation was part of the Reformation period, basically the 16th century, maybe a little bit of the 17th century. A lot of times people have used the term Counter-Reformation as this was the kind of the papal or Catholic response to the Reformation. A lot of times scholars today just call it the Catholic Reformation. It's kind of the idea is that there would have been reform of some type, whether, you know, the Lutheran Reformation happened or not. But there definitely was a counter in the sense that they had to respond because they didn't agree with the Lutherans, so they had to respond to them, right? And so there's a whole movement of popes that kind of begins in the 1530s and really peaks in the 1540s, 50s, and 60s. And that's the popes that really promoted the Jesuits. So the Jesuits do play a big role in trying to counter the spread of various Protestants in Europe, but particularly the Lutherans and the Calvinists, I would say.
I understand that the Jesuits even have a reformer figure like Martin Luther. Tell us about him.
Yes, I thought he would be interesting for Lutherans to hear about anyway. His name was Peter Canisius. He was actually Dutch. He was about the same age as Martin Chemnitz. I don't know if they would have ever met each other, but I'm sure that Peter Canisius and Martin Chemnitz kind of wrote against each other, responded to each other in their writings. He was born in 1521 in the Netherlands, and he spent a lot of his adult career as a Jesuit in Germany and in Central Europe, responding to Lutheran, primarily Lutheran, but also Calvinist theological challenges, to lack of a better term, Catholicism. And he also wrote a German catechism. So he wrote a Roman catechism in German, right? So that's the other thing the Jesuits did as well. Of course, they learned Latin and they learned Greek. The Jesuits were very well educated. And they still are. If you go all the way through, become a Jesuit, you're very well educated. He wrote in vernacular, so he's trying to use the methods of Luther, right, and the same methods to try to win back people, or convince people not to, you know, go to Luther or Calvin, as it were. So he's a pretty important guy. There's also a relic of Peter Canisius in St. Louis University Library. I think it's a piece of his. It's a very small relic, but it's actually, or at least it used to be, unless it's been moved, on the wall in St. Louis University Library when you walk over to the theology section. So I always thought that was pretty cool. So,
what can we surmise about Pope Francis? I remember when we first started doing interviews after he was elevated to Pope, the Roman Catholic guests would say, well, first he's a Jesuit. That tells you a lot of what you need to know. What does that mean? What can we surmise about him?
I was thinking about that and kind of thought, well, the fact that he's the first pope since, you know, 1540 who was a Jesuit. So there had never been a pope who was a Jesuit before him. There certainly have been Jesuit archbishops and cardinals even. One, he had to have had a pretty good education to go all the way through and be to finish the Jesuit tract, as it were, educational tract and so forth. What I actually read, I mean, this is just perusing stuff, and I remember reading news articles, is when he was an archbishop, he actually was at odds with a lot of the Jesuits in Argentina and other places. Part of that, I think, is more modern than anything. In the modern period, especially post-Vatican II, the Jesuits, or many of the Jesuits, took kind of, I would say, a leftist turn. So it's kind of an irony that the group that we call, quote, the shock troops in the old days, in many ways have been at odds with a lot of traditional what a lot of traditional Catholics believe, I think, or a lot of traditional Catholics feel like the Jesuits have been at odds with them, particularly with liberation theology, which there's different elements of liberation theology, but liberation theology often is associated with kind of religious Marxism. And maybe that's not always fair, but that's kind of the way it's seen. And I think that some people see that as been more of an influence on Francis after he became Pope than it had been before. You know, because he's, I know you followed it on your show, he'll say these things that sound like a Pope would never say that thing, and then they kind of walk it back. But, you know, and there's some of the things he's concentrated on, like climate change. Right, I'm not saying that shouldn't be an issue, but is that really the Pope should probably be, in my opinion, be focused on other things. But, you know, I think that reflects more of the post-Vatican II, almost postmodern kind of left wing of the Catholic Church and frankly the Jesuit movement, the Jesuit order.
Dr. Matt Phillips is Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Nebraska. He has his PhD from St. Louis University in St. Louis. Matt, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
On the other side of the break, we are going to be talking about St. Timothy. The Church remembers St. Timothy on the 24th of January. We'll do so today. Dr. Ken Sherb will be our guest. Stay tuned. Several Issues, Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Interested in missions and evangelism? You won't want to miss the January issue of The Lutheran Witness. Learn how the Apostles' Creed informs personal evangelism. Get to know Theodore Nather, the first overseas LCMS missionary. Hear about how one church planter is sharing the gospel in an unreached corner of Albuquerque and discover anew what it truly means to be Lutheran and unashamed. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Duluth, Minnesota would like to invite you to join us Sunday mornings at 9:30. Whether you are visiting our beautiful city or live here, we have liturgical worship that shares Jesus with you. We're easy to find at 20th Avenue East and Superior Street, and also offer Bible classes at 8:25 Sunday mornings with Sunday school September through May. Check out our website for other Bible study times, visit or call 218-724-2500.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington. Mount Olive Lutheran, Madison, Wisconsin. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Gloria Day Lutheran, Davie, Florida. St. Paul Lutheran, Wildwood, Missouri. Redeemer Lutheran, St. Cloud, Minnesota. Concordia Lutheran, Geneseo, Illinois. Holy Cross Lutheran, Rockland, California. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Appleton, Minnesota. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.